Endorsements are flying in the Jacksonville mayor's race. Governor Scott admits he mishandled a controversial dismissal, and it could be weeks to get to the bottom, literally, of that Liberty Street collapse. Some of the stories making headlines this week. And good morning, live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect, always live on the radio, and now our daily podcast is on iTunes. If you miss a show, just subscribe and download your favorite guests any day of the week. Just ahead, it's one of our most popular shows of the week as we discuss all of the biggest news that happened from Monday through Friday with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, don't miss it. It's a special in-studio performance from hometown favorites, Grandpa's Cough Medicine, a preview of their big CD release party tonight in downtown Jacksonville. All of that ahead. And it's Friday, which means it's time for our media roundtable here today. Three of our most popular participants. Fred Matthews is here from The Examiner. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. John Burr, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Great to be here.
And A.G. Gankarski, columnist with Folio Weekly and Florida Politics.
Thanks for having me.
Guys, so good to have you on the show. And it has been a busy news week, lots to discuss. But first this morning, we're going to begin with several items of interest around the Jacksonville mayor's race. Now, among several endorsements this week that he was able to get, GOP frontrunner Lenny Curry also snagged the stamp of approval from Jack's Biz. That's an arm of the city's Chamber of Commerce. Meanwhile, Mayor Alvin Brown says he's inching ever closer to claiming a win on a pension reform deal as a JEA committee approved an agreement that would have the utility make a $120 million payment to the city to help with the massive debt owed to the police and fire pension fund. Now, at the same time, Dark Horse candidate Bill Bishop continues to run a grassroots effort, hoping against long odds to knock off Curry in the March unitary election and make the May runoff against Mayor Brown. So we're going to begin the roundtable as we ask our callers, let us know right now who will get your vote in the city's mayor's race, Alvin Brown, Lenny Curry, or Bill Bishop. And by the way, there's another candidate, Omega Allen. Give us a call, 549-2937, as we talk about the mayor's race, 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. And let's begin with you, Fred Matthews. Jack's Biz, an arm of the chamber, not much of a surprise. It's a group dominated by Republicans who have long backed Lenny Curry. They came out with their endorsement of Lenny Curry this week. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's a sound endorsement from the standpoint of where they are. He's a businessman. They're a businessman. As you mentioned, the majority of them are generally Republican. All the weekend, they won't admit to that, but I mean that's what they come. That's what you're facing here. But they also based it upon the fact that, quite frankly, relationship has been there between the business community, particularly the chamber, and the mayor's office, as it has not been in many cases. I mean, this is also part and parcel of the same thing by him losing the endorsement of Peter Rummel and that group early on. So this is sort of par for the course in terms of what they're doing. And of course, you know, it's a pretty easy endorsement to do.
549-2937. John Burr, Lenny Curry also got the Realtors Association endorsement. His team is touting that. The mayor's office is saying, well, the mayor, Alvin Brown, didn't get those endorsements the last time, and he went on to win.
Yeah, but he was also running against Mike Hogan, who, you know, didn't run the best campaign in the world. I think with Lenny Curry, he's got a much more formidable opponent than Mike Hogan. You know, I'm really interested in this point that the mayor's campaign is putting out that they lost the Jack's Biz endorsement because they would not commit to a tax hike. That's really interesting.
Let's discuss that. A.G. Gankarski, you wrote about this on the website Florida Politics. Several people affiliated with the chamber have contacted me to say that just simply isn't true. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, there are divergent narratives. The mayor's campaign, Fabian Levy, you know, he gave me a statement saying that the tax refusal to raise taxes was instrumental to that vote. You know, obviously the chamber people disagree, and the divergence of narrative illustrates the gap between the mayor's office and the chamber and the forces behind it. You know, that's the thing about it is you look at it and you've got the mayor's office saying, well, this happened. You've got the people in the chamber saying this happened. And that sort of underscores the endorsement and the gap between the incumbent and the chamber.
It's kind of ironic to see this playing out as we have an incumbent Democratic mayor saying, I'm not going to raise taxes. And you've got a group of Republicans who are being accused of pressuring the mayor to raise taxes and are saying they didn't do so. Fred Matthews.
I mean, it's a great game of baiting someone to violate their very same campaign oath. I mean, you can imagine what the firestorm would be the moment the mayor would say, okay, well, maybe I'll consider raising taxes so we can get the pension deal done. It is ironic that you have the many folks on the council waiting for him to propose a tax increase, which they know they don't really want to vote for in the first place, but they're not going to propose anything to change the pension reform plan. Now, the mayor has put this on the table months ago, or even around this very table. We kind of poo-pooed the idea of the JEA jumping doing this thing, but the fact of the matter is that's where the pot of money is. It's the same government. It's the same money that the taxpayers won't have to see any real increase in their bill. And if they do, so what? I mean, it's not as if the JEA hasn't raised the price on us before, but the price of oil and what they do is gone down. So the pot there. But the mayor is simply, I don't think he can take the bait now. It's too late in the campaign.
And 549-2937, let us know who'll get your vote in the Jackson mayor's race. John Burr, you know, Alvin Brown's team is saying he's in a no-win situation. If he stands firm against taxes, he'll be dinged on that. If he says, let's raise taxes, they think he'll be hit on that. At the same time, you've got prominent Republicans like former Mayor John Delaney and others, another mayoral candidate, Bill Bishop, saying, we have no choice. We have to raise taxes.
Yeah, well, what really interests me about this story coming from the mayor's office, and you know, I don't have any reason to doubt it. I don't know if it's true or if it's not. But if it is true that he refused to take a pledge to raise taxes from Jack's that Jack Bush asked him to do, and that cost him the endorsement, then it implies very strongly that Lenny Curry did agree to raise taxes. Of course, you'll never hear that before Election Day because, you know, you're going to lose votes if you say, oh, yeah, I am going to raise taxes and here's why. But, you know, the other side of that coin is really interesting and bears some inspection.
AG.
Well, Mike Hightower in the endorsement press release said that Curry was a low-tax, business-friendly Republican. So, you know, that, I guess, phrase is consistent with raising taxes. I mean, you look at the Delaney statement, you look at the Bill Bishop proposal, and it's clear we need more revenue. Bill Bishop's been out there talking for months about, you know, how 20% of our city's budget is in the pension and how we're neglecting infrastructural issues and this and that and the other. And, you know, it's clear we need revenue enhancement. Is a sales tax the right thing? Is increased property taxes the right thing? You know, something else? Who knows? But, you know, the fact is we don't have the money to do it right now. And we've been dealing with situation with austerity. 2013, for example, when property taxes were raised because council didn't think it had enough resources to do what needed to be done. Go ahead.
But is this the same Mike Hightower who is just chairman of the JEA Board of Directors?
Yep.
Who just stepped down to take another job or retire out of all of this, who's been a major Republican fundraiser for all these years in town, who's making this statement about it? And all of a sudden, he moves away from the JEA, supposedly he's away from it. But now they're actually negotiating in good faith with the mayor to come up with this money that they said they couldn't come up with a few months ago.
Yep.
Same my
and
hometown.
Let's discuss that. The mayor's office negotiating with JEA and now say they're all on the same page about this plan to address pension issues with a lump sum payment coming from the utility to help with the debt owed to the police and fire pension fund. Of course, going into the election, the mayor's office really needs this win on their tote board. John Burr.
Yeah, they may be all on the same page at this point, but the person who's the people who are not on the page is City Council. And City Council is not going to give the mayor a big political win right before the election. That ain't going to happen. And unfortunately, for all of us, for the city, that this agreement, which in the end will probably come out to be pretty much what we're looking at, will not happen until the political winds start blowing another way.
Yeah, and this is really the JEA thing is a huge victory for the mayor's office, and I don't know if the narrative is going to be spun that way. And that's kind of the thing. Like you've seen the mayor's office consistently messaging about the pension situation, having to correct a lot of reports that they thought were fragmentary, and on and on. And I mean, this is a huge deal. It's just a question of what's council going to do with it.
Let's talk about the city council member who's running too, Bill Bishop, sort of the dark horse candidate in the race. Mm-hmm. Omega Allen has also filed to run. She's in the race, although she's not considered a major candidate. Fred Matthews, Bill Bishop the other day on this program said he thinks he actually can make the runoff despite Lenny Curry and Alvin Brown having huge campaign war chests, television ads, mailers going out, because he's willing to go on the record and talk plainly to voters about specifics.
If we get a good citywide publicized, televised debate, I think Bill Bishop will come across as a good candidate. And if we were ever going to run a campaign, have a campaign that was nonpartisan, I think Bill Bishop would do well in that. The problem here is that it may come out to the same way, because we're talking about an open primary here on, what is it, March 24th, that the two top vote getters go there. Bill Bishop could be in those, could very well be facing Lenny Curry.
Things
can change. The numbers could go the other way.
Well, let me just make this plug that there will be a citywide televised debate on the evening of March 12th in our WJCT studios. It will simulcast on First Coast News, both their channels, and the TU is also a partner. So television viewers will get the chance to listen and watch all the candidates. AG.
Yeah, let me preface this by saying I admire and respect Bill Bishop, but Bill Bishop's path to victory is so narrow that, you know, it bears mentioning. This weekend, for example, he's going to the Tea Party Hobnob on Saturday. On Sunday, he's having a Metro Park rally with Wayne Wood. I don't know what commonality the Tea Party and Wayne Wood and the Riverside Avondale types have, but, you know, this is the triangulation that Bill Bishop has to pull off. I mean, he's being tarred with the, you know, he obviously worked with Herman Cain in 2012 in that campaign.
And you know, I asked him about that because that's come up in the campaign. And according to Bishop, that's a non-issue. That's something he sees the Curry camp throwing out to try to sway Democratic voters away from his base. But that will probably crop up again. John Burr.
Yeah, you know, Bill's one advantage, which he is playing to the hilt right now, is he is talking about the issues. He is answering questions. He is taking positions. The other two are not. And that will get him so far. It's not going to get him as far as he hopes, but it is making a dent.
And Fred Matthews, though, as AG pointed out, Alvin Brown and Lenny Curry have campaign war chests in the $2 million range, and they are expected to bring in big guns from the state and national parties as this thing goes along.
Money doesn't vote. People do. And we have precedent for this here in town. Remember the Nat Glover campaign. Dark horse gone. It took only one meeting over at the old Diamond Head restaurant for his two other opponents, one of them being Joe Stelmanos, to fall to the wayside. Again, 4 years ago, the two top money grabbers and contenders battled it out, and all of a sudden, you find us with Alvin Brown as mayor. So we have some precedent for this, even though Alvin raised a great deal of money from the Democratic side. We have some precedent for this. I'm not saying it will happen, but as we get closer to the primary, the voters are going to begin to take interest in it, and that's what's going to begin to make the difference.
And the calls are coming in as we ask you right now, join our Friday Media Roundtable and let us know who will get your vote. Have you made up your mind yet in the city's mayor's race, incumbent Alvin Brown or one of the two GOP candidates, Lenny Curry or Bill Bishop? Those are the three major candidates anyway. 549-2937 to join the show. Bobby on the north side. Hi, Bobby. Go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I want to preface this by saying leadership is not the name of a boat. You have to stand up for something. You know, the other Bill Bishop is the only one who has a viable plan to try to fix the pension issue. The other two are too busy painting the other one with a brush, but neither one has a plan. Because the mayor's plan is unworkable. Curry hasn't presented a plan. So I agree with the panel that, you know, the people who care about this city this is going to be a low turnout election. The super voters know who stands for this city. And hopefully they'll listen because, you know, we have nothing but the future of our city in our hands. And we are not fixing our parks. Our infrastructure is failing. We need a man like Bill Bishop to represent all of the citizens of Jacksonville.
All right, that's Bobby on the north side. Hey, Bobby, thanks for the call. Let us know which candidate you support. Here's an email from Laura on the south side. I listen every day, she says, but Roundtable Fridays are my favorite day. Kudos to all of you guys. And she says, to answer your question, as an independent voter, I want to see Bill Bishop as the mayor. I think he's the most honest of the three. 549-2937, Herman in Jacksonville. Hi, Herman. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you and the gang doing?
Doing great, thanks.
Just two quick comments. I'm kind of interested, and it's not enough conversation about the supervisor of election race between Tracy Davis and I believe it's Mike Hogan, maybe once Robin Long. But however, I'd like to hear from the roundtable, what do they think the EFX-FX is going to be with Omega Allen being in this race? Can she be a spoiler or a healer? Will she be offered a position and bought out? Thanks for everything. Appreciate the comment.
All right. That's Herman. Thanks, Herman. A.G. Gankarski, let's talk about those questions for a minute.
Okay. I mean, supervisor of elections race, you got Tracy Davis with a lot of operational experience in the supervisor's office. You've got Mike Hogan with a lot of experience in city government. He's basically been a political lifer. And, you know, the real question on that race is how well can Hogan and the Curry Republicans work together? Because there's no love lost there.
Oh, interesting. Why is that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there have been a lot of stories about Mike Hogan's political past that have come out. They've been associated with the Curry operation. He was worried that Hogan was getting in the mayoral race. And, you know, Hogan basically delayed his decision until the last minute. They went in supervisor of elections race. Rick Hartley stepped out of that. But, you know, I don't know what the incentive is for the Curry operation to play nice with the Hogan operation at this point, you know, since Hogan's dispatch is a threat from the mayoral race. And regarding Omega Allen, I haven't seen any polling with her, but, you know, her money's such that, you know, it's hard to see there being real incentive to buy her out. Even Bishop, with all of his momentum and all of his media, you know, has about 9%. I don't know where Allen is in that, but I'm sure it's way south of 9%.
Well, Fred, you know Omega Allen. By the way, here's a tweet from a listener. There needs to be a segment on your show called History Lessons with Fred Matthews. What about Omega Allen, Fred?
Well, I mean, this isn't her first run. She's run for city council before. She's been a Republican for most of the time that she's been active in life. And for some reason, well, probably the right reason, she decided to run as a nonpartisan in this race. I don't think she's, unfortunately, unless something changes, she's not going to be a major factor in this race. It's just going to be a question of whether or not, when you guys have the TV forum, whether you're going to invite her to be there. And one performance that she did have recently on, I think it was First Coast News, her grasp of the facts was simply not there. She didn't have enough grasp of the facts. She didn't have real answers to questions concerning pension funds and taxes and where we would go. And that, you know, again, folks can see. You don't get very many chances. So when you get there, you got to do it. That's what Bill Bishop has been able to do. When you ask him a direct question, you get a direct answer with facts behind it.
Dennis in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Dennis.
Good morning. I'm a longtime Democrat. I consider myself more or less a centrist or moderate. But I'm seriously looking to go with Bill Bishop. I'm sadly disappointed with our Democratic mayor. You saw him writing his campaign ads 2 years ago, and I was involved with stuff like with the St. John's River Ferry and what have you, and I see things that came out that, you know, he was going to do this, and then he had to walk those positions back. It just kind of, he doesn't show any leadership, and so the fact that Bishop is willing to come out and address the issues and actually take a stand, that's what leadership is. You know, you can't always be the most popular person in the room. You have to sometimes take that leadership role and say, you know, I know that you don't like this, but this is what we have to do. And I haven't seen that from the mayor, and I haven't heard anything from Curry that indicates that he'd be any different. So I'm I'm pretty sure I'm going to be going with Bishop unless something really dramatic happens.
That's Dennis in Atlantic Beach. Thanks, Dennis. And that begs the question, will Bishop pull votes from the incumbent mayor or from the Curry campaign in the March unitary election?
Well, that's a really good question. I think what Bishop's coin of the realm right now is what people are saying is, you know, of the three candidates, and sorry, Omega Allen, you're not really one of the three candidates. He is the only one who is actually speaking to the issues and taking positions. The other two are just kind of marshmallow, nebulous, politically orchestrated nothings right now. So people who are paying attention to this race are naturally drawn right now to Bill Bishop.
But let's discuss the fact as well, though, that very few voters are paying close attention right now. That's a fact of politics, Fred.
That is true.
Yeah, I mean, we're still some time out. Most people don't. I mean, I think one of the callers hit it on the head. We're going to have a low voter turnout either way we go. I would be surprised if we get 20-25% for this thing. But that inures to the benefit of the two of Curry and to Brown. I mean, they understand that that's what's going to happen now. So they've just been positioning themselves to in the mind to say, look, I've done what I said I was going to do. Hey, he hasn't done what he said he was going to do, that sort of thing. When we get down to it, roughly about 3 weeks before the election and the final a good poll comes out that we can believe in, then that's when the rubber's going to hit the road. Voters will pay attention because, quite frankly, this could be decided on March 24th. It may not go to the May general election.
I think both the Curry and the Brown teams think they have a strategy to win in March.
Yeah, they
AG.
Do. They definitely do. They both will tell you that. I think a lot depends on, you know, what happens with Bill Bishop. I mean, Bill Bishop's, you know, in a position to basically be a kingmaker if he wants to be. He could, you know, endorse one or the other. You know, and you kind of want to look at the tea leaves for that. What is Bishop saying? What is Curry saying? You know, for that matter, what is Brown saying? You know, because I think Bishop's going to be a realist in the end. He's going to look at it and, you know, probably lean toward one or the other. And if I had to guess, it'd probably be Curry.
Tom on the West Side. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes. I'm one of those disaffected Democrats. I cannot see the Brown administration as anything but a failure. And Curry obviously looks way too partisan to me. And Bishop seems to be the person with the plan and the person who's willing to actually speak to the issues rather than just saying, vote for me, I'm a nice guy.
That's Tom on the West Side. Thanks, Tom. Bill on the South Side. Go ahead, Bill.
Yes, ma'am. I don't hear any discussion about the negative impact that the new EPA ruling on generating plants is going to have on the ability of the JEA to do anything. I recall an article in the Times Union that it might cost $1 billion to correct the JEA's use of fossil fuels. And I think that would negatively impact the ability of the JEA to contribute to any plan, and I'd like to hear some discussion on that.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for that question, Bill. Let's discuss this. As the mayor's office and JEA continue their discussions, can JEA, under this financial plan, how will they be stretched when they hand over $120 million, if this goes through, at the same time that they've been asked to sharply reduce emissions, and they'll have to pass that increase on to ratepayers at some point?
Well, what the caller is referring to is that coal is now the being attacked by the EPA as a serious pollutant, and we're trying to get rid of all the coal plants in the country. That affects JEA and all the other utilities in the country that burn coal, which is most of them. JEA has another problem. People are using less electricity every year, so they're getting less revenue from actually generating electricity, whether it's by coal or natural gas or whatever. So they've got a double whammy going on here at JEA. They've got less revenue coming in, and their costs could potentially really go up. I think their caller raises a good question. Over the long term, how viable is that promise to give the city all this money?
But that's the whole point, is that the JEA gets to move over. I think within this deal also is what was discussed earlier last year, was that they get to also shift some of their pension issues over to the city. The city will take a lot of the pension issues off their hands. By giving up this amount of money, the $120 million or so what we're talking about, they also get the advantage of reducing the amount of money that they annually would give to the city. If this deal goes through, it would simply be a percentage of their revenues rather than a higher amount, which then allows the JEA director and board to then begin to do what they should have done 10 years ago, and that is begin to look at alternative fuel sources instead of just coal. I mean, that's what we got into 30 years ago that got us to coal. We need to look at other alternatives other than fossil fuels. That allows them to do that. At a much lower cost, because yes, we out here who burn electricity are going to find ways to turn the lights off.
Well, I don't think that's really fair. I mean, the JEA a couple of years ago was producing 60% of its power through natural gas. It's also made a huge investment in a nuclear power plant in Georgia. So they have been looking at alternatives to coal.
Although they've been criticized, as have all of the major utilities, for protecting their space as there's increasing pressure to get it more heavily into renewables such as solar. You know, there's a bipartisan coalition in Florida now pushing the legislature to let people buy and sell their own solar power units and go around the utilities. So that's a separate issue, but that's brewing too.
That's brewing too. You know, the whole electric generation industry has been going through these incredible changes in the last 5 or 10 years. And, you know, this is an industry that for 150 years didn't change at all. You know, they burned stuff, they boiled water, they turned turbines, they made electricity. That was the business model. It worked for, you know, over 100 years. Now they're being, you know, pummeled on all directions.
And lots of tweets coming into the show. Oh, my goodness. So many tweets. None of the candidates get my vote. Jacksonville needs revenue, and these people have no answer, says one listener. Another listener, the JEA deal is a repercussion of pension rating, the sins of the father. Here's another one. I've lost count of how many times the name Bill Bishop has been uttered on this show.
It's a drinking game.
Okay, let's go to Neil in Riverside. Hi, Neil. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm actually the chairman of the Democratic Party, and I had a quick comment on Mayor Brown and the comments from your panel. So here we're looking at a circumstance where we have one of the best economies in the state of Florida, per the Jacksonville Business Journal. We have a mayor that's governed in a bipartisan way, and we have opponents who've really not addressed the great success here in Jacksonville. So I'd like to hear the panel's comments on how the other candidates might deal with that in a debate.
Sure, and that's Neil Hendrickson calling in, the chair of the local Democratic Party. Neil, stay on the line with us. Okay, A.G. Gankarski.
Well, you have to look at the local economy as a function of the state and national economy. Rick Scott just ran an election, and he's able to point to the same positive economic numbers. And
he was able to win a narrow victory due to that.
Right. Did really well in Jacksonville, too, which is something that the Curry people have taken note of. And you look at the national economy again, you know, the president points to strong numbers, and a lot of that's driven by quantitative easing and other issues. You have a positive economic story locally, but it's not isolated from, you know, macroeconomic events, and I think that has to be said.
And Neil Hendrickson, how is the local Democratic apparatus going to make that case for the mayor as his opponents hammer him on all range of issues? Negative mailers and negative ads are already going out.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've seen is just a lot of disinformation. I mean, and really coming primarily from the Curry campaign, which we know Lenny Curry has a history as a party boss for the Republican Party statewide. I personally have been to statewide Democratic conventions, and he comes with his press caravan, and you know, that's his shtick. He goes after his opponents, and you know, here we have what's really kind of intriguing is a Democrat who's really governed locally without thinking about party affiliation. He has Republican supporters, Democratic supporters, and we've seen, you know, great success in our local economy. And, you know, what is Curry bringing to the table? I just his ads talk about a fiscal conservative, but he's supported by a chamber of commerce that wants a tax increase, but he won't say he wants a tax increase. It's really just kind of mind-boggling when you consider the political dynamics at play, although predictable. Look at Mike Hightower, who is the local Republican Party chair, was the head of the Jack's Biz committee. So it's really going to be an intriguing race, and I would say, like one of your callers, our supervisor of elections race and our sheriff's race, big citywide elections that we all have to take account of because of the serious issues.
Let me ask you, Neil, as a follow-up, as the local party chair, are you concerned at all about some moderate Democrats going over to vote for Bill Bishop? And what's your strategy to bring voters into the mayor's column?
Well, I think that I have a concern when I see Democrats sort of buying into strategic plays by certain candidates. So when the Florida chair for Herman Cain, Bill Bishop, just 2 years ago says he's all of a sudden a moderate, I see it more as a political strategy. But, you know, I think the mayor has very broad support, and I think there's a great chance for the March 24th election to be the end of the story.
And if it's not, is there a strategy? A lot of negative mailings and ads are already going up from Team Curry. We're not seeing the response from the mayor's office in the same way. Are you holding your fire until April and May?
Well, look, the mayor has to govern, and I think the mayor has just accomplished a great deal with what went on with the pension and JEA yesterday. And so, yes, Team Curry is on the attack. And again, that's the MO of Mr. Curry when he was the party boss for all of Florida. So, you know, disinformation and mailers and negative campaigning is what we all expect from Lenny Curry's side, but we have a mayor who's governing and taking the city forward, as we just saw with this pension issue, which, by the way, he took on. He didn't have to take on that issue, except for the urgency that we all know from living in this city. These issues needed to be addressed, and they needed to be addressed, frankly, because the can was kicked down the road from prior administrations.
All right, and that's Neil Henriksen calling in unprompted, the local Democratic Party chair. Thanks for calling in.
Well, that last statement is absurd. Of course, he had to take it on.
Whoever got elected would have had to take it on.
He's the mayor of the city, and this is like creating a huge crater in city
budget.
What
about his point, though, that the others had kicked the can down the road? Fred.
Well, they have. I mean, that's why we're in this boat. What lost in the haze of all this discussion is the fact that the city council, with the past mayors, refused to pay the debt that they owed to the pension fund because they kept borrowing from it over the last 30 years, and they didn't want to pay it. Now they have to pay it because a whole lot of things, and they want to find ways in which to punish the pensioners for what the city has done to them. I mean, that's why the police and fire pension fund and the policemen and the firemen are upset, because you're going to punish us because you didn't pay your debt. And now we and future firemen and policemen are going to have to pay for what wasn't done before and now. That's what's on the table here. But as far as the campaign is concerned, the mayor's got to get out front. I mean, he's got to get out front. He's got a campaign. He's got to tell folks what he's about. He's got to be there on top of it. He holds a bully pulpit, not the city council and not those who are running against him. And unless he's going to do that, I mean, right, he could very well see himself out of this thing come March 24th, because for one thing, a lot of folks that should come out to vote won't come out to vote. Ask Charlie Crist. A lot of people who should have come out to vote for Charlie Crist didn't come out to vote. They didn't come out. And that's what you're looking at here, is you could have a non-race. A lot of folks simply don't care. And I'm talking about Democrats, constituencies who don't care about us because they don't know this mayor at all except for what they see on television.
Well, as we continue to discuss the top stories of the week, we're going to quickly move on and discuss the state's top Republican, Governor Scott, who made news this week saying He could have done a better job in the way he handled the removal of the former head of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Now, the ouster of FDLE Commissioner Gerald Bailey has been a growing scandal. In Tallahassee, Bailey says he was pushed out after resisting questionable and unethical requests from the Scott team and the governor's reelect. Scott made this admission Thursday at a gathering of his cabinet members at a meeting on the state fairgrounds. Meanwhile, as he tries to change the narrative, the governor is inviting laid-off oil and gas workers around the country to come here to Florida to find work. And he's touting a proposal that's sure to be popular. He wants to cut $400 million in state cell phone and television taxes. That's something that's also generated a lot of attention this week. AG.
Yeah, you know, let's start with the governor handling of the Bailey scandal, because I think that's the one that's on everybody's mind. You know, the cabinet basically, except for Adam Putnam, you know, went along with it. Adam Putnam wants a little bit more of an investigation. You know, these guys are positioning themselves for the next race. You know, I also want to talk about the cell phone, television taxes, all of that, too, because, you know, this is something that, you know, his office is touting. Is a big deal, but functionally this just is not a huge deal. I mean, it's a smoke and mirrors sort of, you know, tax reduction that, you know, will help people with incidental petty pocket cash, but it's not going to help people, you know, when it comes to big ticket decisions. So it's really kind of something where you're seeing a lot of political posturing sort of to obscure the scandal, sort of like second term Nixon.
Fred, John, do you see that parallel?
Well, it'll impress me when you decide to, Florida decides that they're not going to tax internet buys. I saw I won't mention the company's name, but it begins with an A, and I saw them send a message out this week telling people, hey, you know, we got an extra fee you got to pay now down there in Florida because. Well, I mean, those two things go together, the internet bill and the cable bill, and if you're going to reduce one, you need to look at reducing taxes on the other or eliminating them altogether. It's a nice thing to do, but it's after the campaign is over. Come on. I mean, you know, what difference is it going to really make to any of us if he takes something off the cable bill? They'll simply find a way to jack it up on the other end.
That's true.
One way or another.
That's true. They
yes.
always get their money.
But
the Bailey thing, it's a botched firing. It was, you know, I think I think Scott basically came out yesterday and said, I screwed up.
Yeah.
And outside of Tallahassee, nobody cares.
Nobody cares as much, yeah.
Nobody cares.
Finally, it is our weekly roundup of the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the Sunshine State. Luckily for us, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida. Now, only in Florida do Super Bowl parties serve gator meat. Plenty of it, too. 30-year-old Richard Nixie of DeBerry was arrested Sunday after he killed five small alligators for his Super Bowl dinner. He apparently caught them all in Lake Monroe. Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission officials say Nixie admitted to trapping the gators, which were all less than 5 feet in length, and cutting off their tails for his game day feast. Nixie is scheduled to appear in court March 3rd.
Who cleans that mess?
Nixie's
he
the
was
one.
Cleaning them on his porch,
Good
they said.
Grief.
I know, right? Speaking
what?
Of...
you can go buy fried gator tail. I mean, it's a lot less work.
Speaking
Fresh
of,
is better.
Speaking of big Jeez. Game hunters...
It
only
tastes
in,
like chicken. Who cares?
Only in Florida do deer hunters cram their catch into a very tiny space. A bizarre bust, also in Orange County, ended like the punchline to the joke, four men, four deer, and one Mini Cooper. Yes, police found inside a fogged-in car four grown men, all passed out from being drunk. And four dead deer. Four. Again, we go back to the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
Like little deer, right?
Where they said
really small deer.
The drivers actually ran over one deer. Then the car got stuck on top of the buck and stalled out. Mm. Authorities still can't figure out how the group managed to all fit inside the Mini Cooper at the same time. With
hunting,
the deer.
Must have been a country man.
Compacts don't work next.
And finally, only in Florida do lawmakers call their colleagues from other states crazy. A rules committee hearing on a bill repealing the Affordable Care Act got heated Monday after Florida Congressman Alcee Hastings called the state of Texas crazy, and he refused to apologize following testimony from Texas Congressman Michael Burgess. Take a listen.
Had the administration worked with the governors, we might be talking about an entirely different...
Had the administration worked with the governors, had the governors worked with the administration, we might not be in this position. And I don't know about in your state, which I think is a crazy state to begin with. And I mean that just as I said it. Some of the policies...
Hastings refusing to back down from his accusation. They say don't mess with Texas, but I guess he's standing firm.
I love Alcee. He's just so good. He's great press all the time.
Not that Florida's crazy or anything itself, but it's always interesting to cover that. And thank you, A.G. Gankarski, Fred Matthews, and John Burr. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In a moment, it's Grandpa's Cough Medicine, a special in-studio performance. That's next.
Wherever you spend your morning, NPR's Morning Edition is there with you. Wherever the story takes place, NPR's Morning Edition connects it with you.
Dallas.
Des Moines.
Topeka.
Montana.
Cleveland.
San Francisco.
Denver.
Philadelphia.
Minneapolis.
Miami.
Colorado.
Washington.
You will own your morning, wherever you are, when you choose to spend tomorrow with Morning Edition from NPR News. Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Travel back in time with Radio Theater, Doo-Wop Revival, The Great American Songbook, and Juke Joint. Throwback Sunday, Sunday nights beginning at 7 on 89.9 WJZT. Looking forward to looking back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Jordan executes two Iraqi militants after the burning alive of one of its citizens by ISIS. The country's role in the fight against ISIS, reaction in the Muslim world, and the future of the coalition.
Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Traffic accident? Better call Saul. Confess to a homicide? What are you waiting for? Hi, welcome to the law offices of Saul Goodman & Associates.
The sleazy, fast-talking lawyer from AMC's Breaking Bad has a new spin-off series called Better Call Saul. On the next Fresh Air, we hear from Bob Odenkirk, who plays Saul Goodman. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
On the road or at home, chill out with the Electro Lounge, only on 89.9 Tuesday to Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, Jacksonville bluegrass band Grandpa's Cough Medicine is a popular act around town, and they were one of the top vote getters at last year's One Spark crowdfunding festival. They'll be unveiling what they did with those winnings with a CD release party tonight at Underbelly in downtown Jacksonville. The new album is called 180 Proof. Grandpa's Cough Medicine joins us now for a preview and a special live in-studio performance. It's good to see you guys.
Good to see you.
Lots of excitement, a new album release party. Tell us about the new work.
Well, we won One Spark 2014 to get the funds for the new record, and then we went up to Nashville, Tennessee to record it in September, and just been getting all the kinks out since then, and it's ready to go.
So what was it like to record up in Nashville?
It was great. The reason we wanted to get some money from One Spark was so we could work with Randy Kors again. We did our second CD with him and really knew it wouldn't be feasible without some extra financial help, but we won, and so we had a great time. And this time around, we were able to get a few more guest musicians with the money, sitting in on songs here and there, and it was a great experience.
you know, as you seek to expand your following beyond Jacksonville, you have a lot of energy, I think, behind you. This city's really embraced you. Why do you think that has happened? Because you've got a really loyal local fan base.
A big part of it is, I think the people appreciate our work ethic. We play a lot, and we practice hard to be able to play at the level we play at. And like they saw at One Spark, we played a lot of hours during that
You
festival.
Guys were the hardest working band at One Spark. I think that's fair to say. You were working, and you were our house band
yes.
for this show, which
so
we
fun.
Loved. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So it's exciting to have you on the show, and we're going to close with a little bit of the new sound from the new album, Grandpa's Cough Medicine. Their CD release party is tonight at Underbelly. Guys, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
One, two, three. Had an awful pain, you know, 180 proof. 180 proof, boys, telling you the truth. It'll put you through the roof, so they 180 proof. Friends tend to call me unkempt and uncouth. They blame it all on that 180 proof. 180 proof, boys, telling you the truth. It'll put you through the roof, so they 180 proof. Well, it's time to pick and I'm feeling aloof. What does the trick? It's that 180 proof. 180 proof, boys, telling you the truth. It'll push through the roof, so that 180 proof. The 180 proof, boys, telling you the truth. It'll push through the roof, so they 180 proof. 180 proof, boys, telling you the truth. It'll push through the roof, so they 180 proof.
Grandpa's Cough Medicine. Make sure to catch their CD release party tonight at Underbelly in downtown Jacksonville. And be sure to log on to WJCT.org so you can watch this performance and bonus live performances from Outlaw Bluegrass favorites, Grandpa's Cough Medicine. It's part of our Studio 5 Sessions series. Again, that's at WJCT.org. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. The show's producer is Sean Birch. The show's theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchik. If you love First Coast Connect, make sure to catch our daily podcast. It's now up on iTunes. You can subscribe to that anytime. Next on Diane Rehm, a panel of journalists joins Diane for analysis of the week's top national news stories. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend and enjoy a little more music. We'll be right back.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.